You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
It seems strange to say this today, given America's prominent role on the world stage across many aspects of culture. But for a lot of history, America wasn't really known for its innovation in terms of artistry and cultural production. Like, you think about Impressionism, Cubism, those were things coming out of Europe. And the art coming out of America was largely seen as just, you know, quaint, folksy stuff, but it wasn't the avant-garde. And that's the way it was largely until the 20th century. And so for this episode, we're going to look at the work of Grant Wood, regionalism, and American Gothic, which I would argue is one of the first iconic bits of distinctly American painting.
I feel like who Art Ed?
Who Art Ed?
Mr. Wood, Art Ed, me.
Yeah. Either way, it's ambiguous. It works like art.
I know.
That's off to a great start.
Welcome to Who Arted, where we explore visual arts in an audio medium. I'm your host, Kyle Wood, and joining me today is Mike Dyvelbiss, art teacher at Brook Forest Elementary. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, Kyle, thanks for having me, man. I'm excited.
I'm excited, too, because you, when we were talking about setting this up, you said you had some connections with Grant Wood and you know, the places where he lived and worked and taught, like right down the road from you at certain points in your career.
Well, actually, it gets better than that, man. So I appreciate you allowing the guest to have a little say. I know you shared some artists with me, and I was just like, you know what? I've always had a personal connection with Grant Wood, and not necessarily because I love his artwork, which I do. So I went to the University of Iowa, and that's where I got my BFA. And when I student taught, I had to teach, well, I didn't have to, but I taught half junior high art in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and the other half in New Zealand. Now, when the University of Iowa placed me, they put me in McKinley Middle School. And so I get there, and I noticed right away, like in the foyer, it's 20 years ago, so near the foyer or something, that there was some Grant Wood stuff. But then I start talking to the art teacher and realize I'm teaching in the same room. Like the same room that Grant Wood taught in. And my mind is blown. Like, come on. The Grant Wood taught in the same room? Like, not worthy. That's incredible.
That is quite the connection. And it's also funny, you know, you were teaching where he taught, and like I went to SAIC. So like I went to the same school he was studying in, you know, so I guess we both have some different connections, but yours is definitely more interesting than mine.
Well, yeah. And then I find out he eventually taught at the University of Iowa. So yeah. And you know, we're both from the Midwest. So I think part of the reason I chose this artist is because I think it's real easy to relate to, at least for us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We're familiar with this style and just his genre.
Yeah, so I mean, we've already gotten into a little bit of our own personal backgrounds, but getting into Grant Wood's background, you know, he was born February 13th, 1891 in Anamosa, Iowa. I probably totally mispronounced that.
No, you did it. That's right.
Oh, I got it right. Excellent. Because you know how sometimes those rural communities, they have an unexpected pronunciation, like they'll call it like Versailles or something like that, you know, in that way that like differentiates the locals from the outsiders.
Absolutely.
So I always get nervous with pronunciations.
No, you nailed that one, man.
But you know, he was in that rural community for the very earliest parts of his life. And then in 1901, So he's like 10 years old. His father passed away, and his mother moved the family, like him and his sister, to Cedar Rapids. So a little bit more rural environment, or going from the rural to the more urban environment there.
Yeah.
And he, from what I understand, he loved art all along. You know, he excelled in arts from an early age. But after high school is when he started to, like, expand beyond the typical art experiences that we all have, you know?
I think Grant Wood's life, just so many of us can relate to it. So when you said that, yeah, his dad passed away. And being a male and a dad myself, I can't even imagine how challenging that must have been. But then you add to that challenge of moving from farm town to the city, and especially at that age, I mean, it's got to be tough being the new student. And he struggled. Kids made fun of him, you know, his clothes, because he was still wearing his overalls. And, you know, he just kind of didn't fit the part in Cedar Rapids at that time. But what kind of saved him was his art and his personality. And that you know, that kind of made a label and a name for himself. And I bet if you were to ask him, like, that was a huge turning point in his life that really formed the trajectory.
Well, I think that's a really good point because, you know, that was, you know, at any time to lose a family member like that is a horrendous blow. But, like, you know, you add to that the destabilizing effect of moving, and at that time when you're just starting to become a little bit more self-conscious at like 10 years old, you know what I'm talking about? You're starting to form that identity. Like, there's a lot going on there that's very difficult. And I like that you pointed out how art was in some ways a safe space for him.
And part of the reason I point that out, Kyle, is because that was for me, and I'm sure that there's other artists, teachers, students that can relate. Like, so not to get too much in my own personal life, but my parents got divorced when I was young.
Yeah.
And I've always got people, you know, what made you get into art? It was my escape, man. Like, that's where I dove into. And so that way, I mean, I could already, before I even look at a Grant Wood painting, I'm already connecting to this guy, right?
Yeah, 100%. Like, that's a very common narrative of, like, people got into art as, you know, a way of coping with other
therapy.
Things. Yep. You know, art therapy, yeah. And so he did excel in arts, and he pursued art beyond, like, high school. He went to the Minneapolis School of Design and Handicraft. Mm-hmm. And, like, what I always
find... I love the name.
I know. But it reminded me of, like, one of my earliest professors. He talked about how, like, he was kind of lamenting that these days we all sort of specialize, but in his day, if you were an artist, you could work with anything. The expectation was an artist can work with anything, and you know, that generalist approach. And so Grant Wood, he wasn't just painting, although he's remembered for his paintings. Like, he was designing jewelry early on. That's how he was making his living. He was building furniture. And so actually he took a job as a silversmith and later opened his own shop in Chicago in 1913. And so in his free time, you know, he went and took classes at School of the Art Institute of Chicago, my old alma mater.
Yeah.
And, you know, then he went back to Iowa to help take care of his mother, I think, when she was, you know, having more health issues as she was getting older. And I think he was helping her financially as well.
Yeah.
But he went back basically to take care of his family.
Yeah.
Throughout all this, you see a lot of just, like, good civic minded, like, he was helping people. He, you know, when he became more prominent, he started that artist colony. He was helping people. He was, I guess World War I, to just go sequentially, he was helping out with the war effort with the clay models and military artillery, helping with camouflage, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so we haven't even talked about his style of art or his painting or anything. And just as a human being, I mean, this guy's pretty solid.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like, he's a great person to know and be familiar with just because of his life, whether you like his artwork or not.
Yeah. And with a lot of it, I get this sense that he was very sort of civically minded. You know, you talked about how he taught in Grand Rapids. I talked about how he went to take
Cedar care Rapids.
Totally different place. Yep.
That's right. That's all right, man.
Cedar Rapids, yeah. But like he was kind of like the community's artist there. Like if you needed an artist, he was the one that people commissioned. He taught there, he painted portraits there. He was doing stained glass there with the World War I memorial, which I thought it was super interesting when I read about that, because again, you don't think about like Grant Wood and stained glass, but he was overseeing this thing. And I guess when he got the commission, he actually went to Munich to learn about the stained glass and oversee the fabrication of the piece, which I just got to think, like, one, the dedication to learning, but two, just like the audacity to take a commission in a medium.
Fake it till you make it, man. Like, fake it till you make it. Come on, like, you've never done that? I mean, as artists, don't we sometimes in our careers just kind of have to put ourselves out there and be like, whoa, I'm not sure if I can do this, but let's give it a go. But he, like you said, he had the audacity to actually go out to Europe, which, I mean, obviously this is a totally different time period, but I would have to imagine that was a pretty penny and not easy, right? That wasn't easy for him to get up and go do.
Well, yeah, that's never been an easy or cheap thing to do, but he did it a few times in his life. Before that, he went to Paris and studied for a little while, and that, you know, he was doing mostly kind of impressionist style at that point. That was before he like fully developed his regionalist approach.
But hey, before we get too forward in that, I do want to, and this is more kind of for the art teachers, because I think we'll all appreciate this. But when he was hired at McKinley, I think they called it McKinley Junior High at the time. So they built the school like in 1922. Don't quote me on that, but around then. And there was all kinds of issues. Like they're saying that there's quicksand. I think they tried building a pool and then that didn't work. But when it was all said and done and they opened the doors, the school building was incredibly boring. I mean, just white walls. And Grant Wood took it upon himself to, he put an ad in the newspaper asking people for houseplants, right? That we'll take care of them. So they were at the school and then they gave them back. But he also brought in artists and got the students to paint murals. So he kind of, you know, took it upon himself to turn this place of learning into a more beautiful, inviting place. Like he saw it. So back to the whole civic thing, right?
Yeah.
It takes a, you know, some people just kind of come in, work and go, and that's it. But this guy looked beyond that. And he's like, no, this is not a, we got to make this right. This has got to be a better place. And another funny story, I think I shared it with you, but the principal at the time in that school asked him, because remember, he's a jack of all trades. The guy can do anything. I mean, wouldn't every principal love this guy? The principal says, hey, I need a bench for the office. And, you know, Grant Wood says, yeah, totally. And builds this like beautiful leather chair. And I think it had like plants or something on the side. And then the principal said, Grant, this is great, but it's too comfy. And the issue is kids are coming to the office because they're in trouble, but they actually are too comfortable. Is there any way you can make me a bench less comfortable? And so if you go into McKinley School right now, the bench is still there. It's called the Mourner's Bench. And he carved into it, the way of the transgressor is hard. And it's a very, you know, it's all wood. Yeah. There's no cushioning or anything like that. And I just love the humor and story behind that the principal asked him for this. And the fact that it's still there is pretty awesome, too.
Well, because when you think about what were the trends in education and school design and architecture back then, a lot of it was focused on, like I've got a lot of 100-year-old school buildings in the community where I live, you know, and you see it looks like an old university, you know, the elementary school looks Ivy League. And it's just because like the surroundings put you in a certain mindset. And I think there is something true to that, like where, you know, the principal was talking about the psychology of like, we need the furniture to match the tone of why you're here.
Exactly. So, and I also love just the fact that he wanted to beautify the school. And I think that could just be an encouragement to all of us art teachers. We may be, sometimes we're kind of stuck in places. I'm down in the basement. But don't let that get you down. Like you can beautify and make this an amazing learning place.
Well, that's what art does. It's transformative.
Yeah. You know? So just one more example of him being the civic, besides just being an artist, right? Just thinking outside the box.
Well, yeah. And I mean, during the Depression, he went beyond the school. He was leading the Public Works Commission with the artists making murals all over Iowa and I believe further in the Midwest.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But that's kind of his background, like, and the piece we're talking about today is going to be, you know, American Gothic, which that is the iconic Grant Wood piece. That's the first one. If you know of Grant Wood, that's the first one that everyone thinks of. And I guess just a little bit about that piece before we start to analyze it. Mm-hmm. I did not realize this, but that piece basically made him an art star overnight.
Yeah. You know? Like he was nobody.
He was the local artist, and then he brought that in 1930. He brought it to the Art Institute for an exhibition. They put it up there, and the museum acquired it. Like,
well, I know it was an art contest, and I've read two different places where either it was a third place finish. I know Mike Venezia in his books, I think, mentioned it was a third place finish, but I've read other places that it won the contest. But whatever it was, it certainly, yeah, just brought him into stardom and put the spotlight on him.
Yeah, I've read different accounts too. Most commonly, I've seen a third place. I've seen a bronze or something. You know, but like my stance is always like, you know what? If you're on the podium at the Olympics, you won.
Exactly.
You
know what I
mean? Yeah. Like,
and
like
from the newspaper clippings that I saw that you know, that covered the contest, it was his work, right? That's on the cover.
Yeah.
So I mean, he. Grand slam.
Yeah, but like I said, regardless of the place that it won in the contest, you know, it was acquired by the museum. It elevated his stature. You talked about how he taught at University of Iowa. That's why. Like, he had that clout, and it elevated his position throughout the art world, you know, beyond just his local community. And it opened up lots of opportunities for him. It also opened up lots of criticism for him. Like, from what I've read at University of Iowa, you know, because he was a regionalist and because other people were, like, you got to think, like, 1920s, 1930s. Well, I guess this is 1930s, but, like, what was popular? What were the trends at that time? It was kind of the international style. It was, like, that high modern abstraction. And like, that's not what Grant Wood was doing. And so,
polar opposite. I mean,
yeah. So some of the tastemakers kind of looked at him and said, you know what? You're making us look bad with this quaint, folksy artwork. We want stuff that shows we're as sophisticated as the Europeans. And we want to show that we're up with the trends.
Yeah. But on the flip side, which you're totally right. But where did he get that inspiration? The style came from Europe, right? He spent time in Paris and did the whole Impressionist thing, but then went to Germany and was inspired by, like, I believe it was Van Eyck and that European, that German style of portraiture. So it's not like, yeah, the subject was obviously very rural and regionalism, but the style wasn't really something new.
No, and I don't want to pretend that I agree with or even think that it was a fully, like, sincere criticism. I think it's worth noting, like, that it did, he did face opposition and challenge is the main thrust of that, because if I'm being 100% honest, I think a lot of people who lobbed those criticisms his way were trying to tear him down to build themselves up.
Yep.
Because they also spread rumors about, you know, from what I've read, he was a closeted gay man. And, you know, so that came out, and like, that's another way of just like, they were trying to smear him to build up their own stature. And, you know, to counteract that, I guess but Grant Wood used to dress like all the time in overalls and like really play up that rural, you know, sort of machismo. And he said things like, you know, his best ideas came to him while milking a cow, when really, like, he didn't like animals.
To be honest, he was kind of removed from the farm life pretty well. I'm sure he has fond memories, especially because with his dad and everything. But when you look at later on in his life, he never really went back to the farm to necessarily do the work.
That wasn't his style. And it didn't need to be, except for his public persona, because his most famous work, American Gothic, and his other regionalist paintings, they were focused on those rural communities that he grew up in and he was a part of in so many ways. But, you know, he needed to cultivate that image of himself being an authentic member of that community, I think.
And let's be honest, you know, as artists, isn't that what we always do? We'll paint or create whatever we're familiar with, right? We're going to...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and so that's just exactly what he was doing. So I think maybe we should talk a little bit about the history of that American Gothic. Like, what inspired that? Like, where did that even come from?
Should we get into that? Because, I think to get into this piece, American Gothic, you know, he was going to an art show in another town in Iowa, and he sees this house with a window that he says he thought was like pretentious, because it's like this big like cathedral window, and he thought, like, on this small house, that just seems like them putting on airs.
And I would probably agree with them. That does look like, wow. Okay.
You would. Except a fun fact I read, actually, they talked to the people who built that house. Uh-huh. It was functional. They built that giant oversized window that looks like a sort of like Gothic cathedral window.
Sure.
They built it so that they could get furniture in and out through the exterior. So like that window would swing open so they didn't have to carry like furniture up the stairs.
Yeah.
It would open up so they could like hoist it from the outside and just shove it through the window.
Oh, nice. Almost like a hayloft door, right?
Exactly. So it's like it's actually like totally practical. But he saw it and he thinks like, that looks absurd. So he stops and it's like literally sketched it on the back of an envelope. And that was the initial inspiration. The house in the background of American Gothic, that was an actual house. His models were people he knew. People talk about, like, you know, is it a husband, wife, father, daughter in the painting? The woman was modeled after his sister. Mm-hmm. And the man in American Gothic was not a farmer. It was his dentist.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, Grant Wood had, like, a love of sugar that, like, even I find it absurd. like he was known to put sugar on his lettuce.
And yeah, that's so, taking it a step far. That's
taking it
a
very, very far.
That's probably
far.
Why he knew his dentist so well, right? That's why.
Yeah.
He had a close relationship.
All that time, he got a good look at those dentist's hands, and he said, like, those are really strong hands. I want you to model for this painting of showing, like, the strong American farmer.
And I think you mentioned in the notes that he originally wanted his mom, right? But mom just was a little too old and just could not sit for it.
Yeah.
So went to his sister, Nan. But mom did contribute the apron, right?
Yeah, she gave the apron. And I guess his sister, like, this is one of those reasons where people say, like, is that a father and daughter? Is that a husband and wife? I guess Nat didn't really like the idea of people associating her as being married to someone like 20 years older than her.
Right.
And so, like, that's.
So, I've always seen it as the father and daughter, and you know, the whole pitchfork thing, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, there's the dad protecting his daughter, right? but I guess part of the connection with this painting. So I grew up here in Illinois, but my mom's side of the family grew up in Wisconsin, and they had a big farm. And, you know, my grandpa Roy, if you were just to go up at any moment and take a picture of him, it would probably look something like that image that you see of the dentist. I mean, just a hardworking guy. I know one memory that I have of him. He passed away when I was pretty young, but his hands, man, whenever I shook hands, you could just, it was so calloused, right? I mean, these are mm-hmm. working hands. And the guy worked, but he was also the warmest, nice. So if the camera's not on him, which, you know, if he's sitting down for a photo for a long period of, or for yeah. a painting, but I do have to imagine that this dentist probably had a sense of humor too. Like my grandpa Roy, I picture this guy with the glasses that, man, you take away the photo, or you take away the picture, that I'm sure he's got a good sense of humor. That's part of the Midwest personality.
I think to a large sense, that's probably true. And I like that you're pointing out like the strong hands, because like from what I've read, that is why Wood chose his dentist as the model. Oh, he liked his strong
hands.
It was his hands.
Interesting.
And as I'm looking at this piece, what I'm immediately struck by is just like the stiffness of the pose. And as you talk about the sense of humor, it does feel, it feels like satire. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah.
Like it definitely does feel like there's this self-consciousness about it. Like, you know, I get the sense that he's playing up a part, which I always think is interesting, because I think satire has this level of authenticity, even as it's making its subject look absurd to some extent.
Yeah, there's a sense of genuineness to it, that it's true. You know, as I'm looking, and I pulled it up on my computer, it would take someone like Graham Wood that's been to Europe, that's familiar with Gothic architecture, to even want to stop and draw this thing on a napkin. So I think that's, you know, something to think about, that he had this connection to European architecture and art, and that's probably why he was so much more fascinated by this house. But the people, as you look at them, I know that a lot of Iowans or just Midwesterns felt that he was making fun of them when this was posted. I've never, have you ever felt that? Like, I don't feel he's making fun of Iowans.
See, I always feel like it's this tone that's hard to pin down, because
yeah.
I feel like there's a certain level of like I say, a certain level of satire or parody in this, mm-hmm. but I feel like in some ways, like when I think about the title American Gothic, Gothic is referencing obviously the older architectural style. And, you know, I think this has that feel of like the overly rigid, stiff, academic posing, mm-hmm. you know, they're like, it's totally frontal. The composition is in some ways triangulated between like the two faces and then the pitch of the roof and the background and every, you know what I'm saying? Like on so many levels, it feels like this composition that is really stiff and formal. And to me, it feels like it is taking the norms of art from a few hundred years ago mm-hmm. and then putting it into the, at that point, modern context of American society in the rural motif, like the clothing, the regionalist aesthetic, and all of that. And interpretations of this have shifted over time,
yeah.
where some people have said, like, some people thought it was, like, poking fun of the rural people, which, again, I can kind of see, but I feel like, if anything, it's more poking fun at the rigid art conventions.
I mean, I guess you got to look, if someone's poking fun, you got to look at the comedian. And I just don't get the impression. I mean, he took so much pride, right, in
yeah.
his upbringing.
In his community.
Right.
Yeah.
How on earth would Grant Wood want to poke fun at his own people? I think that might be something that people outside of this community may have thought. But so one thing to notice, as you were talking about just trying to connect. You know, the Mona Lisa, what everyone loves about the Mona Lisa is that the eyes, you feel like they're always looking at you.
Yeah.
Interesting. I feel like neither of these characters, like, I'm able to connect with. Their eyes, like, even the dentist, or the dad in this case, like, I don't feel like he's not looking at me. He's almost looking past me. And obviously the daughter is looking off to the right there, or her left. So there's also, I guess, part of the reason why you can have this parody is that there's no connectedness. So it makes it easier to maybe joke about.
Yeah. And it creates this sort of tension where, like, I think some of the common associations I've heard are, like, you know, he looks like he is the overprotective father, you know, with a pitchfork ready to, like, you know, stare someone down, looking past them. And it creates this stiffness and this impression of, like, you know, if you're not a part of this community, you're not welcome. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's a stereotype that we hear about a certain number of small communities. You know, they're very sort of insular and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, he was embraced by his community. I don't feel like that's what he was trying to portray. To me, I feel like it was more of, I feel like there's a sort of, like, quiet dignity and a strength in the stillness.
No doubt.
What I think he was trying to do in some ways is portray those rural people, the farmer and the daughter, whoever, you know, the American Gothic. This is their timeless art. This is the American society that will endure, the way that Gothic architecture is so in some ways overblown and in some ways I feel ridiculous when you look at the ornate details and stuff like that and the flying buttresses and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But, like, but it's held up and people have appreciated it for a long time. There's something that is timeless in a lot of that traditional Renaissance and Gothic and, like, the European stuff that Grant Wood was looking at throughout his life. And I think he's trying to say, this is the American version of it. This is our authentic culture, and this is the strength and the dignity that will carry on and endure.
You know, I've always told the students that this is almost like America's Mona Lisa, isn't it? I mean, guys, we've all seen this, that we've used this to represent our country in so many ways. You know, but whenever you translate or interpret a piece of artwork, it's important to remember the time it was made, right? So if I want to translate this right now in 2021, that translation is going to be very different if you don't think about when it was made. You're talking about the Great Depression. And I think, I mean, just after the Great Depression, right? I think that America loved this painting so much because it showed their strength. Like, no, we are going to get through this. We are together. I mean, so that it's important when you look at this work to be able to remember its context, right?
Yeah. Well, and actually I think you're right on there. We got to think of the Great Depression. You know, the Roaring 20s was great. The stock market crash was at the end of that. So this was painted, actually, I would say, like, right at the beginning of the Depression. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where the initial reaction was probably influenced more by, you know, this isn't in line with the international style. And, oh, this looks like you're painting us as these rigid, you know, and, like, you know, he talked about how he felt like that window was absurd. So there is a little bit of, I think, parody here. And I think a little bit of playfulness to this that, you know, I think of it in the way that, you know, you poke fun at your brothers and sisters and your best friends. And so, like, there's a little bit of this rigidness to it. But, like, that's also, I think it's taking a shot at traditional portraiture as much as it is these individual people. But then, as you said, as the Great Depression took hold, people's interpretation of this, I think that's where it shifted from my understanding of, like, reviewing the you know, background articles and stuff, is in the time of the Depression, people looked at this as holding up, like, the strength of, you know, the rural, the farmers, the working class people, the everyday people. And I think, you know, in that sense, it feels to me like a Diego Rivera type of painting, where it's like it's elevating the status of the working men and women.
It's a badge of honor, right?
Yeah.
And this is something to be proud of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's all I got, man.
Oh, is that, so
you got
let's
more?
Talk really, just real quick, the parodies, right? Because I know you're really big into pop art and contemporary art. And I think that's what's made this so fun as a teacher to be able to share with the students. Yeah, there's the whole historical thing, but now, you know, now that it's been around for so long, man, there's so many good parodies. So you don't have to look very hard to find just some great parodies that the kids can connect with, have fun with, and just thoroughly enjoy. Because it's fun.
Absolutely.
You know, it just dawned on me, Kyle, that this painting actually won my wife and I $100. Halloween, you know, the frames that you stick your head.
Yeah.
This is what we dressed up as, and we won the contest, and we got a $100 bar tab at Mullins. So maybe that's another reason why I'm so connected to this. Was that
you're making money off
some fond memories. Yeah, right. But you know, if you really want to talk about Grant Wood's style and his technique, that is also, so I love his broccoli trees, which I always tell my students, like if you look like little broccolis, it's just, I think for, elementary art, which we both teach, it's certainly an artist and a style that kids can really enjoy. And I hope they do. I hope they'll listen to this and want to learn more.
Yeah. Cause I to gloss over the technique, you know, you can see a lot of subtlety in the shifts of value. You can see, but like you can see the way that he's drawing the trees as like a sphere for the canopy of leaves instead of drawing every individual leaf. Like you can see allusions to that texture, but it's more
simplified
a little bit, but still realism. And that's kind of what regionalism was all about, was it was realistic, but it was also a little bit simplified. Shall we wrap it up?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm wrapping it up.
I want
just a 3-point rating scale.
And
where should this hang? The Louvre? Is this something to look at? The lab? Is this something to learn from? Or the Louvre?
British for the bathroom.
Yeah,
there's the a Louvre joke in there somewhere.
Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, love it. You know, it's funny, you probably see this in all three, right? You could, I mean, of all paintings, this would probably one you could see in all three, but obviously, you know what I'm going to say. This is just something that our country, our nation has cherished for so long and means so much. And granted, we've had a lot of fun with the parodies and stuff, but you'd have to put this obviously in the Art Institute of Chicago, not the the Louvre. It's certainly a national treasure. What do you think? Give me your thoughts, man.
I don't know. I go back and forth on it, to be honest. Like, this doesn't feel like a lab piece to me because it's not one that I deconstruct and really learn a lot of specific techniques from. I mean, I could, but I could say that about literally any piece.
Yeah.
Like, in some ways, it feels like a museum piece because it is a time capsule of the culture and because it's also like a Rorschach test where, you know, you can see and bring these different connections to it.
Yeah.
But I got to say also just personally, if I'm being 100% honest.
You're going to put it in the loo, aren't you?
I don't like it.
Oh, you're putting it in the loo.
I've actually never liked regionalism.
You know, I'm not surprised by that at all. I've listened to enough of your podcasts, and I know your style and like what you're into. And part of the reason I wanted to choose this one is because I knew it would challenge you because it's outside of your love, right?
Well, so the thing about it is every episode I do, because I have to research it, you know, the more I research any artist, the more I generally find that I like. I think Picasso is like the only exception to that. but with this one, I'm conflicted because I understand its historical significance, but like, I don't like to look at it.
It doesn't bring a ton of joy. No,
it doesn't. Certainly. Thank you so much.
Oh, man, the pleasure is all mine. Thanks for doing this podcast and just everything you do for the world of art education. As a fellow teacher. I deeply appreciate it. So, and would do this again, man. This was fun.
No, I appreciate you taking the time. And anytime you want to do another episode on any artist that I like or don't like, you're always welcome.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, man.
Stay healthy. Take care.
This concludes this week's episode of Who Arted. If you found this tolerable, please like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. You can find images of the work being discussed this week and every week in the show notes on Twitter at WoodArtEd and on the website WhoArtedPodcast.com. Podcast done.